This is Kelly Blewett. I'm joined in the studio by Dr. Linwood Rumney, who is the author of a collection of poetry published by Javal Press. Linwood is a poet and essayist who earned a PhD in poetry from the University of Cincinnati. He lives here with his wife and son and teaches at Union Institute. Welcome, Linwood.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us about Abandoned Earth.
It's spanned more than a decade of my life in terms of working on it. The earliest poem that I wrote for it, I wrote when I was about 19 years old. That poem went through many revisions, of course. The most recent poem I wrote just a few years ago when I was 33, probably 3 or 4 years ago. So it represents a big portion of my life. Of course, I've been working on other projects on the side, but this is sort of the work that emerged that followed a particular strain. And when I was working on the poems and assembling them and trying to create a book, I realized that I had a chunk that sort of represented a coming-of-age story, if you will, mm-hmm. from growing up in rural working-class Maine to having more worldly experiences, to becoming a more worldly person in some ways, and in some cases in the poems in the book, becoming more overtly political, and trying to understand the connection between my working-class upbringing and my current view of the world.
And it sounds like there's a kind of a big transition that happened between the working class upbringing and your current view of the world.
Yeah, I mean, the normal things that often happen to Americans, being a first generation college graduate, working your way through educational institutions. For me, that meant being surrounded by a lot of upper middle class people, which involved a lot of culture shock and at times despair for me in trying to negotiate that. And then studying in Costa Rica and trying to use that experience in a way to come to terms with my father's experiences in the Vietnam War as a soldier.
So this is a book that has a lot of landscapes sort of alluded to and described. Maine, Costa Rica, your father. But they all sort of come together around your own shifting perspectives on your own identity in a way.
Yeah. I think of the book as in some ways an act of empathy for myself, trying to understand and empathize with the person that I was and became. And I think that that is very much one of the things that writing poetry can allow one to do, to allow one to understand and accept oneself more deeply, even if you still maintain a critical understanding of yourself.
Has assembling this collection, you know, which was written over such a long period, as you described, and talks about your own life, changed the way that you do see yourself?
It's given me a lot of perspective on my life. And I think the connections that I would not have made between my worldview today and my upbringing and how those inform each other. So there is certainly a way in which I've gained a deeper understanding of my life through the narrative of my life that I construct through this book. But understanding that in part it is too also a construction to a certain extent.
I want to get to some of the poems in the book, especially one that really brings us to Maine. But first, it occurred to me that you said that you're a first-generation college student in your family, and now you teach. Has writing this book and sort of coming to terms with your own story impacted the way that you see your students and empathize with them?
Oh, absolutely. As a teacher, I've often pursued opportunities to teach students who I can identify with in that way, because from my personal experience, of course, I understand the troubles that one encounters through that kind of experience. So right now, the school that I'm teaching at, Union Institute, most of the students are adult learners. Many of them are first-generation students from various backgrounds. So for that reason, I've desired teaching in those kinds of situations more than I think a typical professor would.
So we're going to get a chance to hear a little bit from the book. I think the first poem we chose is titled After the Blueberry Harvest. I don't know if there's anything you want to say about this poem or just dive right in and read it to us.
I suppose I should mention that the depiction of blueberry harvesting is both a little bit accurate and fanciful in some ways. After the blueberry harvest. Across the road, three workers burn the field to yield blueberries larger and sweeter than what grows wild. In 2 years, it will be time to harvest again, and I, 15, will work there. But today I clamber through the pear tree's gritty branches in the front yard, through smoky haze and day's heat, through fruit ripening golden around me, tapering from the branches toward the ground, while workers assemble to cultivate flame. One collects loose brush to burn as another digs shallow trenches to temper the fire. A third drags his foot over the soil to signal where the burning must end. I won't be one who masters fire this way, scorching everything to the crowns where roots plunge their torturous hands into sunlight, burning until they remain only as amputee palms sprouting new fingers in a field growing dormant as a cold ember. I'll be one who curves close to the earth to gather the plant's blue wealth, who will temper my body through the misery of work, who'll return home too tired to climb. I'll be one to stand under this pear tree with its nascent fruit, summoning the memory of this blaze.
Thank you. So do you have vivid memories of these fires?
Oh, yeah. My family for a while lived across the street from a blueberry field, and some summers it would be days of smoke. They do try to burn away the wasted, what a farmer would regard as the wasted part of the plant, so that it can regroup its efforts and focus on producing fruit.
Let's hear one more. I think the other one that we selected was called Junkyard Communion.
Junkyard Communion. Sundays, my sister Karen and I'd split bags of penny candy in the junkyard after raiding each room of our trailer for loose change and Pepsi cans. Climbing through the interiors of gutted clunkers, we declared truces that wouldn't last the day. Our lips puckered from flavors: Sour Patch, Lemonhead, Warhead, Airhead, Sour Belt, Jawbreaker, that named the failings of our mother's men. We suffered them then, teeth clenched until burning gave way to no taste, so we wouldn't suffer them later. We were happy, sliding through shattered windshields of Ford Pintos and station wagons, kicking cracked molding. We peered over the dashboard's broken panels, through cattails and foxtail barley, listened through insect buzz and birds chirping from radiator grills to soundless engines that would take anyone nowhere.
Thank you. When I read this, we've known each other for a few years. I was just amazed at how you reconstructed such a vivid memory with all of the senses, all of the specifics and the details. Did that poem take a long time to write and to put together?
Yeah. assembling those details, and I mean, some of them were easy to remember in terms of the image, but I didn't know the word for foxtail barley until I was at a certain stage in writing this poem. And also with all of that sort of drafting stuff, there was a lot of emotional difficulty in the memories that the poem itself summoned. That was the difficulty of a lot of this work in this book. And I think that's probably why it took me so long to piece it together, because a lot of the material is emotionally difficult.
What is it that draws you to poetry as an art form, a way of expressing yourself or a way of even finding yourself in the world through the words of others? Yeah. Why do you read and write poetry?
Well, I mentioned earlier that I think of it as an act of empathy in some ways. I think that all artists, whatever art form they are pursuing, are also very much engaged in it because it satisfies some creative and critical need at the same time. And that's what poetry has provided to me most. In terms of reading poetry, the wonderful truth about contemporary poetry is that there's a multitude of poets and voices out there that exists despite marginalization, despite various kinds of bigotry. And for that reason, it becomes a wonderful landscape of voices that deserve to be listened to.
Thank you for joining us, Linwood.
Thank you.
I've been talking to Linwood Rumney, poet, teacher, and author of the collection Abandoned Earth. This is Kelly Blewett.